You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio, focusing on solutions and thinking different.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Circle of White Light Radio with myself, Alan James. It's the 18th of September, 2022. Good evening. Hello to everybody logging in to the chat room. Now, there's been a few techie changes down my end in the studio as part of a move around. So as I posted up there in the actual chat room, if you have any audio issues where it breaks up or there's gaps or are missing, can you post in the chat room, please, and let me know? I'll be just curious because there's just a couple of gaps like that maybe on the Skype, but we'll see how we get on later on. Now, my guest on the show, which I'll be bringing her in a few minutes, is Catherine Edwards. And the last time I spoke to Catherine was a year ago, funny enough, when the world was a little bit different with COVID and everything else. So we'll have a catch up with Catherine in a few minutes. And we'll have a chat with her. And I don't know whether people seen it today, the skies were covered in chemtrails. It looks like these guys were working overtime today. The sky was full of them. So I don't know really what's happening on that side. I thought we'd actually see less of that as time went on, but obviously it seems like they're working overtime now. Maybe they're getting desperate. Maybe they're near the end and they're just throwing everything at us. Chances are they probably are. Anyway, We'll have a chat with Catherine about that also, I'm sure. Okay, so before we crack on, let's find out what the communication channels are.
The communication channels are email, contact us at circleofwhitelight.com, by phone 046-927-1212, or sign up to our newsletter via our website at circleofwhitelight.com.
Okay, folks, you know the website, circleofwhitelight.com. Also, you find me on patreon.com/COWLR and PayPal. Thank you for your donations. I will be talking about the donations in a few minutes, about the allocation of the donations for this month in a few minutes. And also, T-shirts are available, €10 plus postage and packing. And also, if you go off to the website and type in your email to subscribe, you'll be kept up to date on everything that's going on. So there you go. That's all the communication channels. Right, so let's crack on with a few things that I have to read out, things of interest. On a website called rsvplive.ie, they mentioned that households are in line for 3 credit payments of €200 or more on their electricity bills between now and next spring on the proposals being considered by the government. The 3 electricity credit payments totaling €600 or more will be paid to every household in the country. Now, obviously, they're thinking about this. They probably haven't committed to it yet, but they're thinking about it because the massive costs of electricity bills gone up. People are going nuts because the bills are gone up. I think I said it last week on the show that my bill for the month was the same price or the same charge as 2 months. So it's just madness at the moment. I don't know how people can afford it. And businesses are just struggling like madness at the moment with bills coming in. And I know the UK is the same. Martin Lewis from GMTV, I know he's been on giving out and pulling his hair out and having to go with the government of what's going on and what's happening with people. Peaceful non-compliance, I think he's pushing out there. But I think to put a cap or some ceiling on it. Now, there's record profits going on with the electrical company. So what's going on there? You know, is it the old scarcity game again? I don't know. Okay, and another thing that I have here on the dailymail.co.uk, thanks to Steve for posting this up on Facebook. The Daily Mail are now warning as Diet Coca-Cola drinkers are told that the popular beverage is increasing their chance of having a stroke. French researchers studied the eating habits and health of 100,000 people. Biggest artificial sweeteners fans were a tenth more likely to suffer heart disease. Scientists said their study shows the food additives are not a safe swap for sugar. We've all known that, guys. You know, they call us conspiracy theorists. You're nuts. Why would they put something like that in the food if it's bad for you? Surely the government want to help us and protect us and would never do anything to harm us. Right, okay. Scientists have issued a dire warning to Diet Cola drinkers, revealing that one can a day can raise your risk of heart attacks. Artificial sweeteners, which are added to yogurt, cereal, diet drinks and ketchup, are to blame, research has suggested. Experts found people who consume just 78 milligrams a day, similar to what is found in half a can of Diet Fizzy Pop, were up to a tenth more likely to suffer a heart attack. They were also a fifth more likely to suffer a stroke, the study finds. You know, I have a funny feeling with all these sudden death syndrome and people dying of various strokes and heart attacks and everything else, and because we know the jab could be a big cause of it, I reckon they want to apportion blame. Now, we have been told, for people who are in the know, we have been told by high levels of intel that they're rewinding the pandemic scenario. The WHO announced during the week that they're winding down the pandemic, and it won't be long now before they pull the plug on it. Reason being is there's too many people waking up and realizing they lied. That's why. They know people are realizing that the lies are being exposed, and they want to rewind and just forget about it before people really wake up to what's gone on. Well, a lot of people have anyway, but this is what the inside intel is on that fact. That, and this is why the WHO came out during the week and said we're near the end of the pandemic. It's because they're trying to move it to one side, ignore it, and just get on with the next scam, you know. Okay, things that happened during the week. I came across a website that broadcasts my show on their website. Now, I don't know this site, but there was a couple of comments about the show. The main one was that we never mentioned anything about the Olympics and the people that won gold. You know, I don't really talk about sport, and even on OIM, we never talked about sport. And as regular listeners know, when they listen to OIM and Circle of White Light, we never mention sport because we actually have no interest in sport. You know, in my eyes, it's just a big distraction to keep the peasants occupied. So no, I don't do sport. Now, each to their own, to be honest with you. I know there's people out there who are passionate about certain sports like football and all that kind of stuff. And that's fine. You know, if that's your thing and you're into that, that's fine. But I've no interest in sport. So that's why I don't talk about sport. So, but for the people who won the gold, well done. Okay, move on. The donation this month. Okay, so a big thank you to everybody who donates to Circle of White Light, because you know every month I do a donation. It could be to a charity, it could be a community group, it could be to help somebody out, you know, etc, etc. So the donation for this month went to the Cork Dog Action Welfare Group, who take care of rescued and discarded dogs. Thanks to everyone who donates to Circle of White Light Radio. Your donations do make a difference. And this is the good thing with the donation. You see, From my point of view, Circle of White Light for me is a hobby. It's not a business. I'm not trying to make it into a business. I'm not trying to run it as a business. It's a hobby. So it's not a case that I'm hoping to get loads of money in to, you know, to get really big as a radio show, and then all the expenses have to be paid. I'm not really interested in that at all. I never have been. And even on OIM, we never have been. So this is why I allocate most of the donations to a charity, because once the odd few costs that I have are covered, then the rest can go to a good cause and charity. That's it. And obviously, it's very important these days. Transparency is very important, as you know. So when I post up where the donation goes to, you can see the person standing there with the check saying, "This is the check we received." And if you're not even convinced of that, you can give them a ring and they'll tell you they received the check. You know, so, and that's what it's all about, because it's transparency all the way going forward. That's the new energy, and that's where we need to go. So it's important. But the more that comes in on a donation, the more I can give out. And that's people power. We don't have to rely on the government. We don't have to rely on the politicians. You donate €1 or one sterling pound a month, or $1 a month. And if we had 10,000 people doing that, how many people could we help? And it's very easy, folks. It's very easy. I was told ages ago that wouldn't work. Well, basically, it is. And we've donated now up to, it's now just over €14,000 to worthy causes over the last couple of years. So there you go. It's working. Okay, so the next thing is Richard Cumbers. He's going to be on the show next week. He has a Pain Genie Energy Medicine training course in Tralee on the 1st and 2nd of October, and the location still has to be announced. So hopefully by next week, Richard will have the location, and then he can tell us all about it next week. Okay, so that's all the bits and pieces done. Let's get our guest on. Catherine Edwards, BSc Honours Biology, MBA, is the founder of the Live, Love, Learn podcast, the Catherine Edwards Academy, and CatherineEdwards.life. She works as a private therapist offering a range of services for animals and humans, both in person and remotely anywhere in the world, seeking to improve their overall health and fertility. Her unique combination of holistic natural therapies provides each customer, or whatever species, with a wealth of information to understand the root cause of any imbalances, addressing the physical, emotional, spiritual and behavioural, and providing lasting solutions to regain balance. Catherine is passionate about expanding consciousness and sharing information, and is known for balancing science, philosophy and practical implementation. Good evening, Catherine. How are you doing?
Hi, Alan. I am doing very well today. Thank you very much. How are you?
Not too bad. Thank you for coming on. And as I said there earlier, the last time we had you on was a year ago, and September 2021, and the world was a different place in a way. Maybe it was coming to getting back to normality, but it was a different place than, obviously, we have the freedom now compared to last year. So before we kind of get in to anything serious, how was it for you? I mean, there's the year gone by. I mean, it just flew by. But how was the COVID thing? How did it affect you over that time?
It's interesting because for me, at that my stage in my life, I live in the middle of the countryside. I do a lot of work remotely, but the work that I do with people and animals that I do see face to face, they're very much open and aware. So actually, the COVID restrictions on a personal level didn't affect me, but they did affect my children quite a lot. And I suppose what I've been gobsmacked about really is when I get out of my nice circle of people all over the world that I interact with, and I would include my clients in that because they're very open-minded and pretty aware, although we'll come on to speak about what that might mean. When I go back into sort of everyday society, I'm a bit demoralized about how little I see has been changed or learned from the experience, if I'm being really honest.
Okay, and change from people in general or the government or from who?
From both, really. So recently, over the last couple of weeks, I've had a couple of big extended family do's, and I've been a couple of weddings and things like that. And what I suppose over the last couple of years, I've been so engrossed in the work, the research, trying to provide tools and techniques to help people in all aspects of their life, that I hadn't really interacted with a lot of people who were very much caught up in the whole agenda. And when I then realised I was probably the only person at a wedding of well over 150 people that hadn't bought into the COVID, the vaccination, hook, line and sinker, I was pretty demoralised, Alan, actually. And that experience has repeated itself quite a bit. And I'm now seeing on all the local Facebook groups and all the local communities with everyone just queuing up to get their boosters.
It's madness, all right. And did you have any personal experiences regarding family and friends of falling out because of the jab?
In terms of not so much because of the jab, I've had a lot of people that have not wanted to hear my opinion. Surprise, surprise, because I have obviously been very outspoken, but I've been outspoken about vaccinations for a long while now, both for animals and for humans. So I don't think it came as any surprise to people, but I have had quite a lot of backlash about how people think I'm really selfish. I haven't been in a situation where people have refused to see me. However, I have had a lot of very, very derogatory comments by people thinking I'm very selfish, that I don't know what I'm talking about, that I'm a danger to society, etc. So it has been interesting. I suppose in some respects I've been quite thick-skinned about it because of a lot of the issues I've been speaking out about for quite a long while pre-COVID. However, I can't pretend it's not hurtful still. And I think all of us are in situations where when you're genuinely trying to just have an open discussion with people, I don't think I've ever experienced so many people just refusing to have any discussion on these matters.
Yeah, you see, this is why I like the psychological approach, because when I say to them, I explain the logic of their argument, where if they only have one side of the argument, how valid is their opinion? So I try and avoid talking about the content, which is the jab, and I apply the logic of, you know, the thinking process and their belief system. Now, some people get a bit upset because obviously they feel that, we're challenging their belief system, something they believed for years, that the doctors are right and the government is trying to take care of them and everything else. But at the end of the day, you can't argue with logic. So some of them get it, and then some just get annoyed and kind of walk off, you know. But I think if we didn't have hard skin, we wouldn't have took on the job.
I think that's exactly it. And, you know, the way I look about it is I just think we've all come here with our own lessons to learn, our own purposes to fulfill. And if we're choosing to do this, I mean, I've always been the type of person that would stand up to bullies, even though I was the smallest in my class. I was quite mouthy and I could run very fast. But, you know, I've always been the type of person where I can't bear, whether it's an animal or a human, where the injustices are. And my view is I couldn't live with myself if I didn't present a different a point of view, because it's no point telling someone after one of their loved ones has died or after they've been permanently injured. However, you know, I think like all of us, Alan, and probably I'd be interested to see how you feel. You go through different areas of resilience, and sometimes, you know, you go through the stage thinking, wow, is it really worth it? Why don't I just concentrate on me? And then you sort of pick yourself up, dust yourself off, do some breathing exercises, have a cold shower, and you get back at it again. Because at the end of the day, I couldn't live with myself if I knew something and didn't tell people. But what I have to keep reminding myself is that they have free will and free choice for what they decide to listen to or not.
Yeah, well, I totally agree, Catherine. Right. It's frustrating at times. But here's the thing. This is why, you know, years ago, you know, and when you wake up, you have all this information and you want to go up to people and give it to them, you know, about chemtrails and fluoride and everything else. And they think, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. And this is why I stopped that argument. I stopped doing that because it wasn't working. And then I went back to the psychology and I said, right, how can we apply psychology to it? And since doing that, there was a big difference, a complete 180 turnaround, because you're not arguing over whether the moon is made of cheese. You're actually talking psychology and how the mind works and their belief system and their perception. And when you start doing that, and this is what I found, and this is why, you know, as I say, I've done a few seminars on it. This is why I found people actually are more receptive to it, because you're not trying to push the information on them. You're just trying to get them to think logically. And I have a couple of examples that I use with them, and they can't argue with logic. You know, I mean, you can't argue with logic. And so that's how I kind of approach it. But I know where you're coming from, because, you know, we took this job on, whether we agreed to it or not, in a sole contract, I don't know. And all you want to do is help people and wake them up. Now, not everybody should be woken up. I think we all agree that, you know, I've said this before time and time again, your Uncle John and Auntie Pat, sometimes they shouldn't be woke up. Talk to them about the weather and everything else, but they don't need to wake up. They're not ready for it. But other people, definitely, and how, and the subject matter you approach them on. I know we talk about very, you know, high level stuff like solar flashes and all that, but for people who are waking up with fluoride or smart meters or something, that's the level we need to talk to them on. But as you say, it's disappointing if you went to a wedding and you were the only one that really was open-minded about it.
It was really shocking, particularly since there was such a huge range of age ranges there. And I think also one thing that's been become very apparent to me, and I'd love your views and your listeners' views on this, is a lot of people who say they're awake, it's becoming apparent to me, aren't necessarily very nice people. Now, what I'm going to put this into the perspective of is, are you walking your talk? What's the point of being awake, so we might say, of what the horrors are going on in the world and how mind controlled we all are, if you're not using that knowledge to help humanity, help planet Earth, help all the animals, whatever your passion might be? And there's a lot of people that have a lot of what I would say intellectual knowledge about all this, but I'm not sure it's necessarily changed their behaviour. And when you look at someone who's a good leader in whatever walk of life that might be, you know, a leader doesn't force people to follow them. People listen to them because they're inspired by some aspect of how they live their life. And, you know, my joke is, and it's very unpolitically correct, but, you know, I'm not going to go to a fat aerobics teacher. If I'm going to a fitness class, I expect the teacher to look fit and be walking their talk. If I'm going to a nutritionist, I expect them to be vibrant and full of energy and look healthy. And I think one of the problems is there's almost a lot of intellectual snobbery around being woke, and I know this about that person, without actually changing your behaviour and doing the self-development yourself. And what good is all this knowledge if it's not inspiring the people that have that knowledge, whether you want to call yourself woke or red-pilled, to be better citizens and help others? And helping others might not be telling Granny about the Queen your opinion of what the Queen's been up to. It might actually be something that's helping them to live a happier, longer, healthier life, like the fluoride in the water, etc.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And you know what, Catherine, the one thing I like about you and your background is we both come from a corporate background. And when you come from a corporate background, you have that kind of very disciplined approach to your work ethic and everything else. And obviously, we know that you have to lead by example. And that's the fundamental thing in management and managing staff is leading by example. And what we're seeing is people doing the talk but not walking the walk. And it's disappointing. And I totally agree. You know, the old media and people out there I've come across, and we're obviously going to not mention any names and stuff like that, obviously. But, you know, I'm kind of done with the people who would just talk. You know, if you're going to do something, I want to see you doing something. If you're just going to sit and talk, do a show and just talk, then I'm not interested. I want you to actually be doing something and tell us what you're doing outside of your radio show or outside of your show. What are you doing outside to help humanity? Lead by example. And I know, you know, this is why I love what you do, Catherine, because people who probably don't know yet, well, I want you to tell them what you do because you have an animal sanctuary and you do so much on that side. So do you want to tell us a bit about your sanctuary and what you do?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Anna. Well, I've got a very small little collection of rescue animals, and I tend to get a lot of the rescue animals that, you know, have had a lot of trauma in their life, so need someone that can really devote a lot of care and attention to them. And it's my absolute passion because animals are just so not living from a place of ego. So I do it very much for me as much as the animals, because for me there's no better way than keeping yourself grounded and keeping in that learning mindset, because every day I learn something better about how to care for the animals in my care. But also what I've been doing for more years than I care to remember now is really, it's difficult to put a name on it, but holistic lifestyle coaching for animals and humans. And they go hand in hand, because about really how to give people tools and techniques at whatever their challenge is in their life. So if it's physical, if it's diet, if it's a health issue, if it's a spiritual issue, if it's about finding your purpose, if it's about how to get back to happiness, it doesn't matter what it is, because when one area of your life is completely out of balance, it's very difficult for you to make healthy choices for yourself, and let alone anyone who's in your care. And I think the problem is the way that deliberately the powers that be, as I like to call them, the evil geniuses, have set up society now to really take people away from what is important. You know, I know you're not a big sports fan. My daughter plays soccer, football. And so I've just got back today from a football match. And, you know, every single sports stadium is selling the most awful junk burgers and this. And you look at all the children now, and most families have just got very little access that they can afford, or that they've got the time to cook, or even the knowledge about how to even feed yourself properly. And as in a species, when you've lost the ability to know how to feed yourself properly, then you're on a very downward spiral. You know, the fact that we even need nutritionists for humans, let alone for dogs, says a lot about how far off course we've gone as a species. And I think that's been very, very deliberate and quite geniusly done, really. So we've got a lot of catching up to do. And what I had liked to do is work. I've got an amazing network of people all over the globe that I work with. So if I don't know the answer, I certainly know that someone that does.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what it's good is when you have a good network that people who are doers, that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in the people who are doers, not the people just sitting the fence or the barroom politicians who moan or judge and will complain, but they won't get up and do anything. So I've kind of given up on them people. You know, if you're a doer and you're doing something or you want to do something, yeah, let's go and get something organized. But I don't have time for just the talkers now, because humanity needs to get up off their feet and start taking back their power. We know the cabal have lost and they are literally throwing everything at us at the moment in their last desperate attempt to try and, you know, get rid of humanity. Basically, if we can't have it, if they can't have it, we can't have it. And this is what they're doing. And we are going through some hard times at the moment because they're literally trying everything. But this is why people need to stand up now and find their own power, their own sovereignty, and start saying, right, I'm not putting up with this. Or what else can we do away from the government that we can work together in a community or whatever, you know?
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think this is where it's so important to be walking the talk. You know, people have got to learn to turn up and say no. And everyone's got their own limits as to what they're put up to. But most people, you know, certainly I grew up, and I expect you did, Alan, where, you know, your mother would tell you, well, if they told you to put your head in the fire, would you do that as well? And, you know, it's how much, if there is no avoiding doing the work yourself. And actually, you know, most people listening to this are going to be adults. They're gone is the time for me where I'm interested about whose fault it is. It was interesting to hear you say in your introduction about the chemtrails. I got up at dawn this morning to go and do all my animals, and the chemtrails, I'm in the middle of the countryside, were horrendous. So I acknowledge it, I look at it, and then I go and take all my supplements and make sure my animals have got the supplements to try and minimise the effect of it. Because I can sit there and moan about it as much as I like, or I can say, right, I'm not going to fall victim to this. And it's frustrating, but the more people stand up and say no. I mean, I had so many occasions where I'd walk into my local shop not wearing a mask, and people who I had seen as really, really strong people would be wearing a mask. Now, I wear hearing aids anyway, so I can't hear a word anyone says when they've got a mask on. But they'd come up to me outside the shop and say, oh, you're not wearing a mask. Well, how did you do that? And I just said, well, I just didn't put one on. And I've never thought of myself as, you know, a rebellious person at all, but I've always asked questions. And, you know, I'm not going to do something that I think is absolutely ridiculous. And anyone listening to this that you're a parent, you know, if you're a parent, you're making decisions before your baby's even born about what nutrition you're eating when you're pregnant, about your stress levels, about when your baby's born, every single bit of that child's life until they're old enough to take responsibility for themselves. You're having to make decisions, and you do it with the best information you've got at the time. But if you're, we've got to get away from this namby-pamby state of people saying, well, it's their fault, it's the politician's fault, it's the doctor's fault. Why aren't you sitting there and asking your doctor questions? Why are you not sitting there and asking your vet questions? Why are you not going in and asking the teachers that are teaching your children questions? It's ridiculous. We've got to stop blaming other people. And I think the problem is so many people are so distracted. You know, we live in a society where most families, both parents, have to work, which means they get back exhausted. They haven't got time to cook a healthy meal. It's a vicious circle they're in. So I'm not pretending it's not difficult, but at what stage are you going to get to the stage where you say, no, enough is enough?
Well, this is it. And, you know, we talk about, you know, the awakening. I've always talking about that, and I interview people about their awakening, how it happened for them. And, you know, as a reminder, I think that would be good, Catherine, let's touch base on that, because we all have the awakening where we pull the curtain, you know, we look behind the curtain, it's like the Wizard of Oz with the big bad wizard. And we pull the curtain away, you realize actually the world is not what we think it is. And these people are not who they say they are. So we have this awakening, and then all of a sudden we start, you know, asking questions. So for you, how long have you been kind of awake, and what was the catalyst for you to wake up?
It's a very interesting one, because for me, and I don't know how many other people, I've been awake on certain areas for a long while. So in terms of the pharmaceutical industry, in terms of Western medicine, probably for a good 30 years at least, I've realised it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, I did a biology degree, and even at that stage, I was thinking, this is absolute madness what we're doing. I understood how they were poisoning our food chain very, very early on, because when I was at university, we did some experiments on the effect of pesticides on nutrition and in food. And you're just thinking, if anyone has to think that you're spraying all these chemicals to kill off all these insects and fungus and it's not affecting us, I mean, you really don't need a biology degree to realize that's ridiculous. Of course, there's an effect. So in terms of the health issues for at least 30 years, and when 9/11 happened, I was just about to give birth to my daughter, and I was on a training course with one of my friends I saw last week, actually, and they stopped the course and they called us in to watch the telly. Now, I'm no engineer, but I looked at that plane flying into the building and I just thought, no way, no way. So now I couldn't prove it and I didn't have anyone to discuss it with, but I could see that was absolutely ridiculous. But I didn't probably go too much further at that stage, because everyone else I spoke to believed it hook, line and sinker. What I didn't realise, I've never taken any interest in politics, because I've always thought every politician is a lying, untrustworthy slime ball. I've never listened to the news much, because apart from when I was very young, when they used to have what I call good old fashioned reporters. So I think actually, when I say about it now, for a long while, I've realised that most of what we were told was we'd been lied to. History, I can remember saying about the age of 9 or 10 to my history teacher, well, are the German children learning the same thing about the Second World War as we are? And I got rapidly told to shut up. But on other areas, I had no idea. I had no idea about the satanic ritual abuse. I had no idea about, you know, a lot of that very, very dark side of things, about how widespread it was, let me say. I had no idea how widespread this was. But I never believed a lot of organized religion, because my experience, unfortunately, of the organized religion was a lot of the people I saw who were very into that did not live what I would call were not nice people. Now, I'm not saying that about all of them. There are some. I mean, I know we've got a local church and there's some wonderful people that won that. But equally, I'm like, oh, come on now. These are parables. And where's the other missing information? So I think for a lot of it, but I shut most of it down, Alan, because I just got ridiculed. I got ridiculed for virtually all the time for being a bit silly and ignorant about it. And so I learned just not to discuss my opinions. So for me, when the whole COVID thing, as soon as I saw COVID, I 100% knew that we were being lied to. But most people around me didn't do that. But that's where I, for me, this last couple of years has actually been probably the best, because I've connected with so many more people that I can have these conversations with. Whereas up until the COVID era, when we all went online and mass people started searching for the information, I was very, very limited about who I could have these conversations with.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more people waking up, but we have to be very careful. Oh, the subject matter we speak to them, because I say that all the time, just because, again, they might be open up to fluoride or smart meters or COVID. You don't go and say, by the way, do you know about S4 in, you know, about UFOs and all that kind of stuff? It's too high level for them. That's too much of a leap, you know, and we're all on a path of knowledge, and some people are further down the road than others. It's, you know, the regular listeners to the show, we hear me saying this all the time. And the whole idea of what I talk about the psychology of waking up and belief systems and, you know, their approach, people's approach to it, you know, it opens up when you realize how people think and how the mind works, when you actually start challenging them. And you realize, okay, so when they say that's what's really happening. But when they say that, that's what's really happening. And it gives people an insight as to what way to play the game. Because some people, you don't really want to talk to them about it because they're just not ready. And, you know, at the end of the day, I know we want to try and help as many people and wake as many people up. But I think I've got to the stage now, Catherine, that I'm kind of choosy. You know, I'm very kind of choosy. And sometimes the hardest people to wake up are the people who are awake. And I know that sounds very strange to say that. But some people are at their beginning of their journey and they think they're awake, but they have so many more rabbit holes to go down. But they're kind of convinced that what they know is the right answer. And you think, well, no, there's a lot more to that. You just haven't gone down the rabbit holes to find out about it. So sometimes they're the hardest people to wake up.
I couldn't agree with you more than that. And I think, you know, what I've realized is a lot of people who've been talking publicly about things, you know, I'm now seeing from my perspective, and I will absolutely say this is just from my perspective, but it links into what you said about what are you actually doing to help humanity? Because if your purpose of sharing the information is to be superior and think that you're superior because you know these things and these other people don't, but are you doing it from a point of compassion? Are you doing something where you're actually going to do something to change your local community, to help someone in need? Because for me, some of the kindest people I know who actually have shown themselves over the last couple of years to be absolutely invaluable to their communities haven't got a clue about most of what we're talking about, but their daily actions are doing far more to help than someone who's sitting there and might know all this information, but aren't actually changing what they do as an individual with it. And it doesn't matter what that information is. But, you know, if you so, for example, I saw one of my lovely, lovely neighbours who grows a lot of their own veg out. I was mortified spraying glyphosate on their driveway where all my cats go across and everything. And I was horrified because they obviously had no idea about how dangerous glyphosate or Roundup is. So I approached them and I said, oh, you know, what are you spraying? And they said, oh, it's just Roundup. And I sort of said to them, would you mind? Actually, this is something I've studied extensively. Would you mind if I told you some of the health problems for this and what other things? And they sort of looked a little bit hesitant. They said, well, no, go away. And then I shared some of the information and they actually, oh, well, I'll go and look that up. I mean, they were sort of, did they believe me or not? But they believed me enough to say, I'll go and look into it myself. And I think this is the problem, is if we're telling people from a superior point of view about, look how important I am because I know this and you don't. Well, one, a lot of the stuff we're talking about, we don't know. We know some of it. We don't know all of it. None of us know all of it. And if we ever think we've got to the stage where we know it all, there's a big problem because I don't know about you, Alan, but I'm learning stuff every single day. And, you know, I've now got to the stage where I'm like, OK, knowledge is power, but I'm not going to stay in that stage of just horrified about what I find out. I move very quickly. And what am I going to do about it?
Yeah, totally. There's a couple of things you said there I'd like to pick up on because you're spot on with them. One, number one is people need to get off the emotional roller coaster. That's something that I was on in the early days where the actual information would have an emotional effect on me, either positive or negative. And I've now don't do that anymore. I see everything as information and everything as neutral. Because if you're going up and down, that's what they want. When negative information comes out and you're affected by that emotionally, I think, you know, that's not good for you and your body. So from now, for the last few years, I just see everything as a treat as information and there's no emotional feelings attached to it, and that keeps me neutral and also keeps me balanced and gives me a kind of a, I can step back and view it from a neutral point of view. The other thing is definitely on the path of knowledge where people are further down the road, we have to be humbled as well. And you know, it's Catherine, you know, when you find somebody, this happened to me, where somebody had just recently woke up and they sent me an email and they said, hey, Alan, do you know the fluoride in the water is really bad? Now, I was doing fluoride 10 years ago. But I said, listen, thanks a lot for the information. And here's some other information that might interest you on fluoride. And that's the best way to approach it. We have to be hold their hand and bring them forward and not be arrogant in because we know it and they don't, or they've just woke up. And we have to be, as I say, humble and just, you know, although we've been on the journey a long time, there is a very, there's a quickening happening at the moment. And there are people waking up very quickly with this information now. To the stage, Catherine, I think we've run out of conspiracy theories. I think we'll have to get a load more.
I think you're so right. I mean, virtually everything has been proved right, but I think so many people don't see it. You know, just take the thing about the vaccinations. To us, it's unbelievable. It's like, how much more data do you want out there? But I was sitting there in a room of 20 people. They were all pensioners, but very switched on, very, very switched on in terms of intellectually. And they were like, well, it's worked for me fine. I don't. So one minute they're sitting there saying, since I had my last booster, my arm's just been hurting continually. They must have hit a muscle or this happened. And I've said, well, you're not questioning what's in it. Why would you need, if it was polio or something like this, you wouldn't be having a booster every few months. You'd be saying, hang on a minute, this isn't working. Well, it's obviously working for me because I haven't died of COVID yet. And I'm just like, where do you even go with that? You know? So I think the thing is, what you said is so important. It's encouraging any bit of questioning, any bit of information sharing. And I've been so turned off listening to so many people saying, well, I knew this 10 years ago and I knew this. Well, so what? You know, all our circumstances are different. People are going through different things in their lives. They've had different upbringings and therefore we've all had different programming put into us at a subconscious level. And I think, you know, are you looking at things through a compassionate point of view, and are you working on yourself to take responsibility for yourself? Because until you actually start taking responsibility for yourself and your own actions, and if you're doing it powerfully enough, people will take note. You know, all those of us that are parents, you know, children do what you do, not what you say. And this is what I think in society, you know, people are going to listen to people that they can see are talking about things in a calm and emotional way. And I'm naturally a really emotional person, Alan. So I've had to work really, really hard at putting, you know, for me, heart-brain coherence is absolutely key and it's transformed my life. But it's not something that comes naturally to me. It's something personally I've had to work very hard at. To make sure, because if not, I'll just put people off by just being too emotional about things.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of turn that around into doing something practical that I can do in a way to help. And the whole idea, you heard me mention the donations I do every month. And even though it's not a lot of money, to some of these charities, when you give them the few hundred euros, they're over the moon. Because, I mean, one lady, I think it was the month before last. Oh, no, it was last month. I contacted her on Facebook and then I contacted her on email and I said, look, we have a donation. And she deleted them because she thought I was a scammer. So yeah. I phoned her and I said, no, you know, you've been nominated for a donation and I'm going to come down to you on Friday and present you with a check. And she was just blown over and over the moon with it. And although it was only a few hundred euros, at the end of the day, she was delighted because anything that she got helped. And so this is putting kind of, this is how I kind of get around by doing something that helps people in a kind of humble way. I'm not looking for a pat on the back. If anything, it's not really me. It's the people who donate. If they didn't donate, I couldn't do it. So it's not really me. It's really the people who donate. But I will give you something that you can use, Catherine, if you want to use this as an example, because I talk about an awful lot about the child mind and the adult mind and the difference between both of them. And I'm not saying that we will, if the world was full of adult minds, I'm not saying it'd be utopia, but it would be a lot better than what we have. And this is why we have the nanny state, because there are adults out there still with a child mind. So this is what I use as a kind of tester, right? And you can, anybody tuned into the show who's listening to the show, you can all use this as a little tester, right? So I say to this, and I did this on a lady I know who was, inverted commas, spiritual, right? And I said to her, I said, do you know, we don't really need a law to stop us from drink driving. There shouldn't be a drink driving law. And she looked at me horrified and said, what do you mean? Of course we need a law for drink driving, otherwise everybody would be doing it. And I said, well, are you telling me that you're incapable as an adult to work out that drink driving is a bad idea for you and potentially somebody else, that you need an external nanny state to bring in a law because you're incapable of working that out? And you could see her brain ticking away, you know. But she kept on saying, oh, she turned around and said, oh, no, we still need the law. We still need the law. She didn't kind of get it, that being an adult and having an adult mind is all about taking responsibility for yourself. And as Freud has said, that a lot of people don't want to take responsibility because that means that they have to be liable. They have to put the hand up and go, yeah, that was my fault. People like playing the victim and blaming everybody else. But we have to stop that and we have to become the adult.
That's so, so important. And I think you've hit on something very important there, is the ability to say, I'm sorry, the ability to say I was wrong, the ability to say, you know, actually, I thought this then, but now I've got new information, so I've completely changed my mind, is so important to this. You know, anything. So when you look at science, I love science. I'm, you know, a scientist and a spiritualist. But, you know, the whole point about science is continually asking questions and then you prove or disprove them. And to me, that's what life is like, you know. And if you're lucky enough to learn from your mistakes without that killing you, you're on a good job. But, you know, it's not many of us. You know, I can sit here as a 50-something-year-old person and say, yes, I would do this, do that. But I look back at decisions I made in my 20s. I wouldn't have cared if I'd have wanted to go off travelling. I didn't question what they were pumping into me to go to the jungle. And this is what I think we've got to realise, is that life is about learning and continually learning and supporting people through that learning journey. But equally, I do think you've got a duty of care if you've gone through that learning experience to share it and therefore put it out there in a way that people can choose to whether they take it on board or not. Because to learn something that might have saved your life and not share that with others, to me, is immoral.
Yeah, totally. Or something. I mean, I mentioned earlier about the Daily Mail coming out now and saying about aspartame. I mean, that's the mainstream media. Now, we've known, as you know, conspiracy people, we've known about aspartame a very long time, I'm sure. Yeah. A lot of people have, and the dangers of aspartame. And there's a great documentary on YouTube called Sweet Misery, where the woman goes and starts investigating aspartame and exactly how it got into the food chain. And again, dodgy deals, 1983, and then the increase of brain tumours in 1984. With Donald Rumsfeld being head of CERL. So people need to investigate. But see, people have so much trust in the government because they believe that the government are there to protect them and to wrap them in cotton wool, and they'll never do anything to harm them. And they just, and this is the thing, I think maybe it's their blind trust in the system. And doctors as well. I mean, they call it a doctor's practice for a reason. And that's what they do on the patients. So I don't know. I mean, I was the same before I woke up. I had trust in the system and trust, you know, I mean, governments, you know, you can kind of take them or leave them. But going to the doctor, you think the doctor's going to tell you the right stuff, you know, and give you the right information. And, you know, now the drug side. Yeah, you think just kind of some kind of, I worked in Big Pharma when I was lived in the UK. And so I kind of knew, I seen what was going on there in Big Pharma, and that changed my opinion on the whole drug thing. So I kind of woke up with that. But yeah, it's just a case of, look, every day we learn, every time, well, you know what, I say every day we learn, you know, there are some people, Catherine, and you probably know them as well, that they are happy with their lot. They are happy they organically will learn a few things, but they're not really interested in learning anything more than what they know. It's too much of an effort. I'm happy with sitting down watching me TV and watching this, that and the other. And I can't personally understand that myself because I love learning. And I always say, the more I know, the more I realise I don't know, because you start going down the rabbit hole and you realise, oh, I thought I knew about that and I didn't. And again, to be able to say I don't know is very important.
I think it is. And I think the people that are happy for like that, I just think, you know, to me, it's quite simple. You get out of life what you put in. And, you know, we all make choices. And however brainwashed you are, you know, life has a way of showing these things out to you. And if you are genuinely very content with your lot, then that is absolutely fantastic. And people that are genuinely very content with their life tend to be some of the nicest people to be around, because they're not living an ego. They're not jealous. They're not bitter and twisted. In terms of people believing the government, I actually think there's very few people that do. I just think they can't be bothered, because we're in a society now where it's so much easier to blame someone else for whatever's happening in your life than to take responsibility. And, you know, sometimes that might be the case. If you're a child or an animal, you are dependent on those in charge of you, and you have very little choices at that stage. But once you turn into an adult, there's a change of your life where, whether you like it or not, you take responsibility. And really, are there many people, if we just take the UK as thing, that actually would sit there and say, I trust this person to make a decision, a life or death decision for my child? I don't think any of them would say yes. I think it's a convenient excuse. And I think, you know, in that case, unfortunately, we learn through our challenges, and people will learn through their challenges. Because if the people that are genuinely content, and in my experience, they're very few and far between, I think make fantastic citizens and do contribute in whatever way. I think a lot of the people with that apathy, I think, are they genuinely content? Not from what I've seen.
Okay. And do you think that what we're going through now, apart from obviously the jab and COVID, is part of the awakening process? Because when over the year, 2 years that we've had the COVID and the lockdowns, and I spoke to a few people, the people I spoke to on both sides, the people who went out for the jab seemed to be the people that were panicking and stressed and worried and everything else got to do with COVID. And the people who were aware of what was going on, the bigger picture, and who didn't get the jab, seemed to be more relaxed. And their life was, they said, oh, my life's okay. Yeah, no, it's pretty good. Things are going okay. And it's the other people who are worrying about COVID and getting the jab were the people who are stressed out and having, you know, major issues. And I think, obviously, now that they're kind of coming out of the jab, and the prices have gone up and people are struggling in a major way, I just think, I mean, is this part of the awakening process again to get people? Because a guest I interviewed years ago on OIM said, when people can't put food into the children's mouth, that's when they'll wake up, but it'll be too late. And that's what his comment was. And this is going back to like 2016 or something, 2015. And I don't know, do you think that we have to get to that stage to get people to wake up?
My sad reality answer is yes. I mean, I'm a big fan of Joe Dispenza. And, you know, most people do not make changes in their life unless a crisis forces them to. Now, when you look at any species in nature, if they got to that stage, they would be extinct. So any other species in nature never waits for a crisis situation to make changes in their life. You know, they have to live in balance with nature. Otherwise, the whole herd dies out. And I think, unfortunately, with humans, we've raped and pillaged, and we've most Westerners, for example, and of course I'm generalizing here, probably most of the people listening to your show do not fit into this category. So I apologize for that, because if they did fit into this category, they wouldn't be listening to us have this conversation. But I think, unfortunately, most humans, we've got so disconnected from being part of nature. If you look up the definition of nature in the English Oxford Dictionary is basically everything outside being human. Humans aren't included as part of nature. And I think that sums up everything to me. And I think the problem is a lot of humans, unless you're on a self-development journey, unless you're into a journey to understand, you know, your life and make better decisions, which is probably the people who are listening to this today, most other people will wait for a serious illness, for an accident, to lose their house, to not be able to feed their children, for war, whatever that tragedy might be, before they then wake up to make serious changes in their life. And unfortunately, for a lot of people, by that stage, it is too late, is a sad reality. And I think, you know, it's hard as it is to say, because when those people in that category are your loved ones, but equally, if we're on a spiritual path and we believe we're all here to learn our lessons, it's a fine line, isn't it, in terms of how much do you interfere. And how I've come to find peace with myself about that is speaking your truth in a way where people have a choice whether to do it. So if I'm doing a podcast or a YouTube channel, people have actively got to choose to listen. I'm not standing on the street corner just catching everyone as they come out of Sainsbury's. So for me, that's why I think then it's a conscious choice if you choose to listen to what I'm saying. And quite frankly, if it triggers you, then I feel I've done my job, because it's only when those triggers, when that friction hits you, that you start to question things in your life quite often.
Yeah, well, something that you said there just now about, you know, something has to happen in their life, which is part of the waking up process. Either they lose the job, or they lose somebody close to them, or there's a medical issue. Something is the catalyst to make them think and ask the questions. Because people, you know, are in their comfort zone, and the ego loves protecting us. But it's only till we step outside the comfort zone where we start learning. But people need to understand that, you know, it's the ego that's stopping you doing that. And you need to do that to learn and to develop. And maybe that's what needs to happen. I mean, we had a DJ over here in Ireland before he passed away called Jerry Ryan. And he said that Ireland is a country full of NIMBYs, which is not in my backyard. And it's a case of, as long as it doesn't happen to me or it doesn't affect me, I'm fine. I'm happy, Larry. That's okay. But so whatever is happening, whether it's source, God, creator, or whatever the divine plan is, that people have to go through a certain element of hurt. I mean, I got made redundant when I was living in London, and it's not a nice thing to happen. But it's part of the awakening process. That had to happen for me to do what I'm doing today. Because if that didn't happen, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. So even at the time it happened, there's no way was I thinking about, you know, doing a radio show and moving country and all that kind of stuff. But that was the divine plan for me, I suppose, and looking at my life. And this is where we are today, where I'm, you know, doing a radio show. So it's interesting when you look back and what happens. But and everybody probably has a time in their life where they will have the awakening. And maybe if it's not happening quick enough, maybe something happens to trigger that. I don't know. I think we all have to get there. And I think there's a lot more people now. I mean, I've been doing radio for 12 years now, but I've been awake since 2001. Obviously, 9/11 was a big catalyst for that. And I'm definitely seeing a lot more people awake. I'm not saying everybody, because like you, Catherine, you go into a certain, you know, a wedding or something like that, and you realise that only a handful of people get it and understand it. And you think, why, we have a really long way to go. And maybe, which we'll get into, there is going to be some divine intervention in some way, you know, because this is what the talk is all about. And maybe we'll get into that, because I know you've spoken to a few people on your show, and they said things that have been going on are being planned and stuff. So, but I'll just say to the listeners on the chat room that if you have a question for Catherine, thanks for your questions coming in there. If you have any questions for Catherine, put a Q or question on the front so we can see it on the chat room. Thank you. But so do you find that, you know, the awakening process, and are we getting some divine help somewhere along the line based on the people you've interviewed and what they've said?
I think we're getting a lot of divine help. I really do. I think that everything's changing, from our atmosphere to the information. You know, they say when the student's ready, the teacher will come. Mm. And when the student's really ready, the teacher will then disappear. And I think that's really happening now. I think at the moment there is so much there for people, for all different ways of different people putting different messages across in different ways that are going to appeal to different people. A lot of it for free. I also think, I mean, I 100% believe that there is help coming at all times from, whether you want to call it divine beings, off-worlders, whatever. But I think that help is good and bad. And for me, the great awakening is nothing to do with an external force. For me, the great awakening has always been about us as individuals understanding our true potential. And by true potential, I don't mean any of the standard definition of success or achievement. What I mean is there's so many brilliant people now speaking about what is true happiness. You know, I think the last couple of years have been incredibly different for so many different people, and everyone's circumstances truly unique. However, I think there's a huge amount of appreciation now for more of the simple things in life. I think the fuel hikes and the fact that so many people this winter and people are not going to be able to afford to heat their homes is making people look at different choices, the choices they're making in their lives, that, you know, the how we've been fooled on a lot of the green energy sources side of things, about how, you know, I've got neighbours here that have literally spent the last 3 months out chopping wood.
Yeah.
You know, so I do think there's always a positive we have. The point is at what cost? And, you know, for me, the hardest thing when I'm feeling a little bit depleted in energy is thinking that, you know, you carrying the world, weight of the world on your shoulders. And what you said about the charity donations you give, to me, is the biggest message of the night, Alan. It's like, it doesn't matter how much it is. If you save one dog, if you give one meal to one homeless person, to that dog, it has transformed their life. Mm. And, you know, there are a lot of good people out there doing a lot of good work. And each and every one of us can just do something small each day to pass it forward and to contribute. Then I think a lot of these problems would disappear. So what I'd really like to see people doing is now, anyone listening to this, they're going to have a very good grasp of what's been going on. Now, what are we going to do each day, however small it is? It's those little things that really do change the world. And I think if every single person sort of said, right, moving forward, I'm going to help my neighbour, I'm going to make different choices with food. Because at the end of the day, if we don't buy this crap, they won't survive.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, again, it goes back to community and helping each other and trying to get like-minded people to get together and to do get together in the community. And it is hard, although I am involved in a community group which is called the Men's Shed, people are aware. And Men's Sheds are very popular at the moment. And it's a group of men getting together, and it's all got to do with doing projects for themselves, for the local community. And it's mental health as well, because, you know, there was statistics say that, you know, the men and women commit suicide, the numbers are equal. But the problem is that they're not technically equal, because men are more successful, and men who commit suicide tend to be more violent than the women. And that's the statistics. So although they're saying that men and women commit suicide are near enough 50-50, men are more successful at it. And what we try and do with the community group, with the Men's Shed, is to include that in, you know, because we always say, the saying is that women talk face to face, men talk shoulder to shoulder. You know, yeah. And while we're hammering stuff and working on stuff, we might be giving out about the missus or whatever, you know. And it's to get rid of that energy or anything that's on your mind, or, you know, we can talk about or have a laugh about or something. And obviously working and doing projects for themselves and the local community. So, and I urge everybody to join a local men's shed if you have one in your area. If not, set one up. And there's women's sheds as well that you can join as well. So if people want something to do and they don't know what to look at, then pop along to the local shed and check it out and see what you think. Maybe there might be a men's shed, but you might have a ladies' night where you can go and learn all about DIY or make things or do stuff. You know, it's just being active, about doing something and getting to know people in the community and getting to talk to like-minded people.
That is so, so important. And at the end of the day, if we can all be good friends to each other and listen with an open heart, and we don't need to understand everyone else's perspective because we can't, because we haven't experienced what they've experienced. But if we can all be good friends to each other, then we're just all going to be just fine.
Yeah, definitely. Well, listen, I'm going to go off to the questions, the ones I have here at the moment. And the first one is from CXZR, and he wants to know, are animals easier patients than people?
Animals are the best patients ever, and they are so much easier. The problem comes is that the animals don't have the power to make the decisions in their life. So really, I'm never really working with the animal. The animals, whether it's a physical, behavioural ailment, are so easy to sort out. The issue is with the human that's making those choices for the animal and getting them to see their responsibility in it and how they can make better decisions for the animals. So yes, animals are way easier because there's no ego involved. But at the end of the day, the sad reality is the animals can't make the decisions for themselves. It's their human in their life that are controlling what they can and can't do. So therefore you have to work with the human.
Okay, so if I give you a choice and I said you have a choice to be on a desert island where animals are humans, what would you pick?
Oh, animals, no comparison. Yeah.
I just thought I'd ask you. Okay, because you know, you always say the more you know and the more you realise what's going on, the more you want to spend time with animals and not humans.
Absolutely. And you know, but in all seriousness, there's so much we can learn from them because, you know, obviously every species has got their pros and cons and nature can be very cruel. But there's, you know, at the end of the day, that when you take the ego out of it, and there's not a single animal on the planet apart from humans that are driven so much by their ego.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And ego causes so many problems. I've come across it by a number of people I won't go into, but it causes so many problems. Okay, next question from, again, CXR seems to have a few questions here. He obviously likes the animal side. Have you had much experience with vets?
I've had a lot of experience with vets, good, bad and ugly. And unfortunately, that most veterinary training is done sponsored and completely by pharmaceutical companies. So you'll very rarely get a vet these days that has any training in how to establish health. It's all disease management. Having said that, some vets are incredibly open and do a lot of self-study. The problem is their hands are very, very tied. So we do need veterinary medicine. You know, if your cat or dog or cat or horse gets run over and has a broken bone, you need a vet to sort it out. But equally, I think a lot of us should be down to a lot of us expect, you know, why would you go to a vet for nutrition advice? That should be your job as the animal parent to work out and study what that species does. So I work a lot with vets. Some are absolutely amazing. Some are challenging. In my experience, a lot of the ones that really want to help people understand how to keep their animals healthy are forced into leaving their profession because the legislation and the controls on them completely do not allow them to support most holistic therapies.
Okay. And CXZ, another question that's come in from, said, what kind of treatments do you use with your animals?
A huge, huge range. So for me, it always starts with nutrition and exercise and environment. So I work extensively with people, getting them to understand whether it's a rabbit, a guinea pig, a horse, a deer, a hamster, a dog, a cat, about what sort of environment they need, what food they need, and what exercise they need, what company they need. And then in terms of specific therapists, I'm an animal iridologist, so I look into the iris of the eye to detect health imbalances and inherited strengths and weaknesses. I'm a herbalist and I use something called zoopharmacognosy, which is animal self-medicating. So I use herbs, natural products, essential oils, but I teach people how to let their animals guide which ones they want and how they need it. I use red light therapy, animal communication. Red light therapy is a bit like acupuncture, but using lights instead of needles. So I do a whole range of things, a lot of nutrition advice, because when you get the basics right, a lot of the rest of the problems move away. And also looking at, for example, particularly in the horses, what equipment and how they're being kept, because most problems with horses are due to the equipment we put on them or the fact that we shove them in a stable.
Okay. And what about these people that are proclaimed to be and say they're like horse whisperers or dog whisperers and, you know, they can communicate with the animals? Do you put any credence into that?
Absolutely. I do animal communication. We can all communicate with animals and humans telepathically. So, yeah, that's a big, big part of my job. And it's absolutely humbling to see what the animals tell us, because 9 times out of 10, they're telling you stuff about the humans rather than themselves. Because, you know, at the end of the day, let's face it, we've seen what it's like to have humans that we don't trust make decisions for us. You imagine being a dog that's fed kibble and being vaccinated and flea treatments and chemicals put on them and left alone all day and everything. However much that owner says they love their dog, that dog hasn't got much trust in the decisions that the owner are making for them. So animal communication is absolutely a real thing, and anyone can do it. Most children are absolutely brilliant at it until they get told by adults in their life that don't be silly. So yes, 100%, I know it's true because I've experienced it for so many years now.
Good stuff. Maybe we need a politician whisperer, you know, so we can get them to whisper in their ear or something and find out what's going on, because it's amazing.
It was one of the best things from every human would be to learn to communicate with animals. And there's some brilliant courses out there, because you do then can pick up telepathically so easily what the humans are really thinking. But it's a double-edged sword, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Rather not know.
Exactly. That's it. And some things you don't want to know. Okay, Hotline wants to know, question for Katrin, how does she tell the difference between all the people she interviews if they are good or bad with their information?
That's a very, very good question. Now, my whole purpose when I started my channel was expanding consciousness through curiosity. So I've made a conscious decision to interview people not based on whether I agree with them, about whether I feel they're contributing something positive to our learning. But I have made some mistakes, and, you know, you will see that, you know, I've changed the type of people and the type of interviews I've done, because I've gone through a huge growing process in this journey. And, you know, certainly, and this will go two ways, because people will feel the same about me as well. But you cannot do this work and be speaking to all these people and not grow and learn a lot yourself. And so in terms of, do I think they're inherently good? I would never interview someone that I didn't feel had their heart in the right place. However, I will say that we all change. And going back to the ego again, you know, people can go through a stage, and I've seen this with healers as well. I've seen healers when they've got, or animal communicators or any profession, when you suddenly get very popular, some people, it really affects their ego, and then they might go through a stage where I don't resonate with them anymore. Doesn't necessarily mean I think they're a bad person, but I feel I want to step away from that energy whilst they're being driven from that ego. But the good thing is the universe always has a good way of sorting that out for people. But it's a very good question. But a lot of the people, and it's one of the things I think most people don't understand, and I'm sure you find this, Alan, is that I'm not going to learn anything by just speaking to people that I agree with.
Totally.
So I speak to a lot of people, and it absolutely does not mean that I agree with everything they say. However, if I've invited them as a guest on my show, I want to be respectful to them and allow them a chance to speak. And I trust my listeners enough for them to decide whether they resonate. And I try not to make it obvious myself, because I don't feel it's my place to have my personal opinion to be influencing others using their own intuition.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, two things there that I'd pick up on. One, you know, our ego being our ego. I mean, we all have ego. It's part of us, but we have to control our ego. And obviously, ego is made up of arrogance and ignorance. And the one thing I'd say about that is I've come across people where you're talking about, you know, when you interview people, I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people over the years. And there's even one spiritual person I contacted to do a show with them. And we had a kind of pre-show chat a few days before the show. And they mentioned one thing that they tune into. She was a channel. And I kind of said, well, that doesn't resonate with me, I'll be honest with you, but we can talk about it. And then the next day, I got a message saying, oh, my angel said that I shouldn't do the interview. I'll have to do it another time. And I thought, so basically, because I turned around and I said I disagree with one of the things, or one of the things she was into didn't resonate with me, she decided to pull out the interview. And to me, that is just so fickle. That really shows somebody up in their thinking when they do an interview, everybody has to agree with what you say, or, you know, you can't have a good interview. I mean, I would have been, you know, respectful to her, you know, opinion and her experience and everything else, but I just was being upfront and honest and saying, well, that part doesn't resonate with me. And then the next day she pulls out. And I don't know whether you've had that happen to you.
I've had a lot of weird situations. I do joke with my friends that I could write a book about the messages I've got on my phone and the experience I've had over the last couple of years. And I do see that a lot. I think, you know, and any time, you know, at the end of the day, we can all connect with whatever forces resonate with us, whether it's angels, whether it's channels, whether it's guides or whatever. But at the end of the day, you're still always putting that information through your filter. And I just see that as a complete excuse. You know, don't blame it on the angel. Just say you've decided that, you know, you don't think it's going to be helpful and do it. And this goes back to the NAMBI state again, is people need to hold their hand up and take responsibility for what they're feeling. And I really relish talking about subjects that I don't know a lot about, because to me, I'm not going to expand and learn if I'm just getting guests on that have got the same sort of information as I have. So a lot of the time they're talking about stuff that I don't necessarily do. And I try and ask those probing questions so that it should become apparent to the audience. But the problem is, you're always going to see people are always trying to justify their opinion. So for every person that says, I love this person and they make them feel great, there'll be someone else there that's saying, oh, don't trust them, they're a fraud or this. And I think it's one of the worst things about social media is the fact that people can just put a comment like this without understanding that everything you commit to writing, everything in the spoken word is energy. And why do we need other people to agree with us so much? What I'd love more is almost for people to sit with that information and not be influenced by the other listeners saying, oh, no, they're a fraud or not. What do you think? What do you think? Was that conversation helpful to you or not? And the great thing about when you're listening to any interview is you've got an off button.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And here's the thing. The thing is that if somebody puts something up like that, we have to be adults, again, the adult mind, and we go, well, I'm only getting one side of the story. That's their opinion. And
exactly.
did that person who made that decision, that if they posted something up saying, say about you, Catherine, somebody says, oh yeah, Catherine Edwards, I'm not a fan of horse because of X, Y, and Z, right? Well, number one, that's one side of the opinion, because, well, why do you have that opinion? And what's the other side to it? And number two, how far down the road are you to in this, in the wake up process, in the awakening process? Because you're forming an opinion on something of where you are today, but maybe tomorrow you'll like Catherine because something new comes in to change your mind. So we have to question, and the trouble is that even thinking takes energy, and a lot of people outsource their thinking, especially when it came to COVID, to the government. I don't want to think about COVID and the dangers of the vaccine. I'm going to outsource that to the government and let them do the thinking for me. And this is the problem. We hear one side of a story, and I mean, one person who contacted me, which I'll do an interview with him. I interviewed him years ago. And because somebody rang up the police and made an insinuation which was false, the police actually came and kicked down his door and arrested them. And he had a nightmare. And in the end, it was all thrown out. It was all false. But that was caused by somebody who obviously didn't like him and made an insinuation about him which was false. And this was, his life was turned upside down with it. And I'll get him on the show. And I'll talk again about it because I interviewed him a few years ago. And this is the problem. So the other thing about ego, and, you know, Catherine, it's nice getting nice compliments when you do a show and people go, oh, I really enjoyed your show. But I learned a valuable lesson from Neil Peart, who's the drummer from Rush, while he was alive. And he said on one of his comments, he says, I don't read the good comments or the bad comments. And people said, why not? He said, because if I believe the good comments, I have to believe the bad comments. So I don't believe any of them, which I think is a great approach and a very leveling regarding ego.
I think it's really, really important. You know, we've reached it. There's brilliant things about social media. There's brilliant things about technology. We wouldn't be having this conversation if we didn't have it. But it takes away the personal responsibility. When you and I were at school, if you were going to bully someone, you had to do it face to face. And the trouble is now is people react without processing so much. It's so easy to react and put that out there. And, you know, every single word we say is a spell, is giving energy. When you commit it, there's a reason why journaling is so powerful to self-development, because when you write something out, you're strengthening the energy behind it. You've only got to look at Dr. Emoto's messages from water experiments to show that, and anyone can try that experiment at home. And I think the problem is that as humans, we're not going to learn from people that just agree with us and just repeat what the way we see life. If you want to be a top tennis player, you've got to go through pain. You've got to go through relearning your serve. You've got to go through repetition. It's not easy. You don't get on tennis court once and become Wimbledon champion. And that's what I see life for. And the thing is now is we're so against being triggered at all. You know, as soon as someone says something that we disagree with, we throw everything out about them. You know, there's a saying, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And it's some of these sayings are so important. Just because someone, you know, there's so many books. Look at the books that I've had through spiritual teachers over the years. And now if I believe what we're told about what these people are up to, but does that mean I'm going to disregard all the good advice that I've got and the learning processes I've gone through? No. Does it mean I'd buy their next book? Probably not. You know, but let's see life as a constant learning stage. And let's, you know, if you don't like it, if it's not serving you, triggers are really good up to a point. If you're not emotionally in a state where you want to be triggered, don't put something on that you're going to learn from, because any type of learning will involve triggers.
Totally. And, you know, the people that are defensive, again, you know, if you all the work you do regarding the horses and the rescue animals and everything else, and people, you mentioned it there, which is correct. And let's go back to the corporate world a bit. Let's talk about Dale Carnegie, because Dale Carnegie, as a manager, and when you have staff, you know, one of the things that, you know, when I was in the corporate world, I couldn't turn around to my staff and say, you stupid idiot, what you do that for? Bad, yada, yada. Because I'd be dragged up to HR being kind of insulting to the staff. So Dale Carnegie, a part of his teaching, says from a management point of view, you don't react and just speak your mind. Because I think these people who go around saying, oh, well, I'm very honest, I speak my mind. No, you're lazy, inconsiderate and disrespectful. Because you can't be bothered to actually think about what you want to say before you say it. You just, there's no filter there, and you just say what's on your mind, which is wrong. The whole idea of the Dale Carnegie approach is to not react, which tends to be always a negative in most cases, but to stop yourself, think about what you say and then say it in a more constructive manner. And I think if more and more people applied that, I think the world would be a better place, because then you wouldn't have the people reacting. Because a lot of the time when it's a reaction and it tends to be negative, of course, the person's going to get defensive and react to that. And then there you go. You have your argument or you have your negative debate. So I think we have to start thinking, which takes energy, about what we say before we say it. And I know it's easy to say and harder to do. And it takes work, it takes practice, it takes time. And it won't always be, you know, 100% all the time with me anyway. I'll try and apply it as much as I can, but every now and again, you know, something happens. I'm only human. But I do try and think of, you know, approaching things that way, because I don't want to go down the negative route, you know. And of course, I agree with you, Catherine, that it's good to get people on who are see things from a different point of view, because you get their point of view and how they're seeing it. And I don't know about you, but I've had people where I've had a guest on and he'd be saying things and people would say to me, why didn't you have a go at him over X, Y, and Z? And I said, well, that would be my ego coming in and if I did that. And I said, no, he's on here, he's doing the show, I've asked him his opinion. Now, if the listener, you know, it's really down to the listeners. If they agree or disagree with the guest, that's down to them. It's not my opinion. I'm just there to interview him and find out what he knows. And I'm sure you probably apply the same skills and the same thought process when you interview people.
Yeah, it's so important, because it's hysterical. If you're going on an interview and you're interviewing someone, by the very nature, you're asking them to give their opinion. So people shouldn't be offended when the guest gives their opinion. So long as the guest isn't expecting anyone to agree with their opinion, then what's the point? But can you imagine how boring the interviews would be if you get a guest on and they refuse to give their opinion? You know, so this is the point. It's like it's looking at the context of everything. You know, it's like, is it an interview where you're interviewing the guest and asking their opinion? In which case, let the guest say their opinion. Is it a roundtable discussion, in which case is everyone having a chance to go backwards and forwards? There's all these different things. And I think at the end of the day, I will go back to one of my favourite sayings by Wayne Dyer. You know, if you squeeze an orange, only orange juice can come out. However much you squeeze that orange, you can't get lemon juice out. And if you are reacting in a certain way and something anyone is saying is bringing out negative emotions in you, a nasty side to your character, horrible things you're saying, then those emotions were inside of you. Otherwise, every single person on the planet would have the same trigger, the same opinion. The reason that we all like some people and have different opinions about others is because we're all unique. We've gone through different experiences. And what I think this need for everyone else to agree with us is so, so damaging. You know, dogs have a disagreement. They go off and lie somewhere else and they're fine. They're not saying, I need that dog to agree that other dog was rude to me and I had every right to go for it. It's taking responsibility and understanding that whatever emotions are triggered in you are your emotions, not the person that's done it. Now, of course, you've got people that can be deliberately triggering, deliberately provocative. But everything takes practice. And we all know people that don't react to those things at all and let it all fly over them. And when you're feeling on purpose, happy and content in yourself, you really don't care what other people think of you. I'm not at that stage yet because I've got a lot more self-development work to do. And sometimes I can, when it's something I have done the work on and I feel really clear at where I stand on something. And for me, how do I know why I've got more work to do in a particular area? Because I can see myself getting so triggered.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, I've got a couple of more questions in for you here. CXZOR said, do you come across animals with emotional psychological problems?
Sorry, you've cut out, Alan. I can't hear you.
Okay. The question is, do you come across animals with emotional or psychological problems?
Oh, massively so. But it's always caused by humans. You know, if a dog has a fight with another dog, it doesn't leave it with psychological problems unless the human shuts them in together.
Yeah.
So, yes, I see. And one of my specialities, I deal in, with a lot with traumatized animals. And unfortunately, the trauma is always coming from the human interaction. So in the wild, you know, a lion can catch an impala, but the rest of them, then once one's been caught, they get on with their lives. They don't sit there 6 months later saying, do you remember when Fred got eaten by the lion? It's awful for them at the time, but they let it go.
Yeah.
What the problem is with humans is we find it really, really challenging to let it go.
Mm, definitely. Hot Lame wants to know that he said he was listening to Catherine on her show with Ismael Perez talking about timelines, dimensions, Stargate and all we are going through. Isn't life supposed to be happy and simple?
I don't really understand. Is that a question or a statement?
Well,
I
mean, obviously does in the interview that you've on the interview that you did with Ismael. I mean, there's a lot going on in life. I think we wish that life was actually easy and simple and happy. That's probably what we used to have before the cabal came in on the negative side of things and then turned everything around. And I don't think we're going to a utopian society, but maybe, I mean, well, I know, well, just watching the time here, Catherine, we didn't even get to talk about the whole idea of ascension and solar flashes and everything else. So I suppose we can touch base quickly on that. What is your take on the energies that we're at now with the Schumann off the charts and everything going on? What's your perception of that? Do you feel that something's going to be happening?
Two questions. First of all, I'll just touch on, is life meant to be simple and happy? It is. It's a choice. You can choose that now. I don't, whenever I hear about the solar flashes, it's really fascinating to me because so many people say it's fear porn. When I hear the talk of the solar flash, there's nothing that gives me fear at all. You know, all the descriptions I've heard, say, from Ismael is if there's a solar flash, the good people will be fine, the animals will be fine, nature will be fine, the bad people will be wiped out. Do I believe that's going to happen? Personally, no, I think it's incremental. I think these changes are inside of us, and I see the Great Awakening as an internal job, not an external job. Would I like there to be a solar flash and it to happen quicker? Absolutely. But I think the Schumann resonance, I think everything's changing. And to me, we know from quantum physics that we have the power to change the energetic and the magnetic vibration and change the Schumann resonance. And I think it's not something that's happening to us. I think it's something that we as humanity are influencing.
So where do you think it's going to take us? There's a lot of talk now, and I've listened to a lot of people on the spiritual side or people who do regressional hypnotherapy and all that, and they're saying that it's like we're waiting for something. They're expecting something to happen soon. I hate that word soon because I've heard that for the last 10 bloody years. But I'll just use that word because, you know, everybody's using it. So do you feel there is something changing that's going to happen? Because one of the things I mentioned earlier was about the rainbows. Now, I've seen these rainbows, so I've seen them in the sky. And not just the ordinary rainbow that you see, but just rainbow clouds, which are very strange. And this is one of the signs that people have been told that the change, and people will see the change in the sky, that's where it'll start. And we're going to be seeing more and more of these rainbow clouds. So is that a sign for change and how it's going to change? Do you think there's going to be a frequency change on the planet in some way?
I think there's a constant frequency change. And I think that to me, the key is that you're seeing those rainbow clouds, but not everyone is. So for me, I take it straight back to the fact that I think this could happen now, right here, right now, if we all had the right intent and put it out there. So personally, I think we're all going to see these things at different rates based on our level of awareness, self-work, and how able we are to control our own individual frequencies. I do not see that there's going to be a big event that's suddenly going to transform people. And even the people that talk about that are still saying that people, you know, some will be in a 4D consciousness, some will be in 5D and be separated. So I still think it's a very individual thing. I think there's huge shifts in energy, good and bad. But for me, the significance is some people can feel that and some people can see it and others can't. And I think we can step into this alternate reality right here, right now, as soon as we make the choice, which goes back to the other person's question about, isn't life meant to be simple and happy? I think it is when you choose it.
Yeah, we have to make the choice. Again, you know, the things rent and space in your mind, you have to decide whether you want them in there. And it's like a slideshow. I think you just have to change it. Now, I know it's very difficult for a lot of people who are struggling at the moment, you know, with bills coming in and everything else. And it's very difficult. And I can definitely understand it. But I suppose at the end of the day, we can't let it rent space. We have to, you know, just try and do our best when we can. And, you know, I do find, I hear these people channeling entities coming in, whether they're spirits or ETs or whatever. And the ETs are saying, oh, well, sit down and meditate and be positive. And that's all great. But if they've never been down on the 3D, gone through this, then they can't really say that. They have to experience things themselves. But I do believe that we are in control to a certain extent of our own mind, obviously, and we can choose whether it's going to affect us or not. And it's not good for your health anyway. So maybe, I don't know, maybe getting involved. I find I've come across people who are struggling, and yet they're the nicest people you could meet and the kindest people that you could meet. And I've met other people who are not struggling, who have loads of money, and they just wouldn't give you the time of day. I know I'm not going to say that applies to everybody. Obviously, it's a generalization before people send me an email in. But it's a generalization. But generally, that's what I found. I don't know whether you found that.
Well, I think there's a couple of different issues there in terms of the fact, first of all, about the life. What do we think we're here for? You know, you don't sit down. If you sit down at a movie or pick up a book and you know everything that's going to happen, what's the point? Why would you read it? So I think first and foremost, it depends. Do you view your life as enjoying the journey, or is it all about the destination? And for me, it's about the journey. So I'm not in a hurry for a lot of these things to happen, because the whole point is they are happening at different speeds for different people based on where they are along their own individual journey. And I've forgotten the second bit of your question, Alan.
No, I was just talking about the actual, you know, people who have less money seem to be more generous than people who have money seem to be less generous in general. As I say, I'm not being specific, but on certain people, but it's just something I've come across. You know, every now and again, I've seen that.
I think I do agree as a generalisation, it's very true. And I think therein lies the message that we can tell people as much as you like that money doesn't buy you happiness, and it doesn't. Now, a lack of money can make life incredibly stressful. Absolutely, I 100% believe that. But, you know, the whole definition of where we're heading for and what we aspire to in terms of what we count as success in life, has been proven time and time and time again by science, by life experience, that isn't right. Some of the happiest people that I know are the ones that live the most simply.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I think there's a lot of people, and I'm going to include myself in this. I'm trying to declutter. I'm trying to get rid of stuff, sell stuff, and just want to declutter and try and simplify the things that I have in my life and the things that I'm doing. And I don't want to complicate it. I just want to kind of keep things simple. And I just find that I'm happier when I'm kind of decluttering and not doing anything too major. Yeah, there's a lot of projects and things that I do, but this is all kind of down to choice. And when it's down to choice rather than obligation. And I remember listening to an interview by JC Kay. I've interviewed JC as well last year. And she did a show and she talked about obligation. And you know what? She was pretty close to the mark about feeling obligated to do things you don't want to do. And I know it's a catch 22, because there are things that, you know, when it comes to family and stuff like that, you think, oh God, like, you feel obligated doing it. So how do you feel about that? Do you feel obligated doing things, or would you turn around and go, no, I'm just going to do things the way I want to do it regardless?
I would definitely say I haven't got to the stage where I don't feel obligations to do things. And also sometimes I don't realize it's an obligation until I realize how I feel having done it. So some things I'm pretty good at saying no to, and other areas I've still got a lot of way to do. And I think it becomes very, very apparent to you when you're really tuning in about, is this uplifting me energetically or dragging me down? Then that's where I learn, and I learn to say no better. And I am getting better at it. But, you know, it's something, again, that doesn't come naturally to me, saying no to things. So I've had to learn almost the hard way. I mean, some things I can say no to straight away. I mean, there's nothing anyone could say that would persuade me to have a vaccine that I disagreed with, for example. So that's easy when it's so clear cut. But in terms of, do I want to do certain things? Sometimes I'm not quite sure. And the only way I realized it was an obligation was how it made me feel after I did it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And you know what? I find that focusing, especially the negative thing, being around people or being around something that's negative, is something I'm trying to focus on more and more. And this is not kind of a woo-woo thing. It's just for your own sanity. Being around people who are positive, being around people that are positive people. And because I always say, and people have heard me say it on the show, you look at the six closest people around you and you ask yourself if they add positivity to your life. And if one or two of them don't, they need to be replaced with people that do, because positivity breeds positivity. Now, I know that's hard when it comes to family, but you try and do what you can, because your own energy is very important. But, well, I'm just watching the time there, and I just want to get your take in the last few minutes, get your take on the cabal and what you think is happening worldwide. Do you think we've definitely won and this is just a tidy up process and this is the chaos going into the new era of change, or what do you see happening?
Oh gosh, that's such a big one to finish on. There's no part of me that feels it's not going to be okay. Do I feel we've definitely won at the moment? No. I feel it's a bit like you're two football teams on the pitch and one's 10-3 up, but it's not over until the final whistle blows. And I'm sick to death of the apathy of people that actually have been studying a lot of this for the last couple of years and aren't getting off their backside to consciously change things and wherever they are. And what I mean by that is that is just what we started the conversation with, is saying no to the little things, because every little bit of compliance is leading us down a dangerous path. Do I think it's all going to be fine? Yes. But do I think more people need to actually play their own part in it and just do those little steps of saying no, of supporting the businesses that are doing good and dropping the ones that are not, of actually, if you're really not happy, going and having a word with the school teachers sitting down with your doctors or your vets or whatever, or making an appointment to sit you and talk to your politician if you can bear it. I think that we've still got more work to do, and I think I'm not ever one of the ones to sit back and let other people do it. I think everyone can play their part, however big or however small, and we should do what feels right to us. So in general, I absolutely think that the good is prevailing, but I don't think it's over yet. And I think if we sit back and rest on our laurels, you know, fool me once, fine, fool me twice, then who's the fool, you know?
And what do you think? I mean, because a lot of people are being told, maybe by the cabal or by the controlled opposition, they're looking for the saviour programme, the saviour. Don't do anything. Sit back. Don't do anything. I'm going to save you. We're waiting for the saviour to come in. And there is no saviour. We are all the saviours. We are the people who will save ourselves. But there are people who are buying into that, thinking that the ETs are going to come down and save us all. Or somebody like Trump or somebody is going to save us. It's not going to happen. How do we get them to wake up to that?
I think all we can do is lead by example and doing our own work, keep evolving, keep doing the inner work. You know, there's not one person that, you know, I've spoken to that hasn't been saying about you have to do the work yourself. You know, everyone keeps saying, is this person good? Is this person bad? Well, if you're not tuning in with your intuition And there's loads of ways people can do that, which will cost them nothing, but no one else can do that for you. No one. And so I think you're exactly right. You know, to me, this whole great awakening is we are our own med beds. We know how to heal ourselves. Does it mean there's things that can make that easier for us? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, if we're it doesn't matter whether you're looking for someone to come and heal you, whether to do this. I mean, anyone who's a healer knows that you're not doing the healing. You're just facilitating that person. And if the person doesn't have the belief in it, it's not going to work. And this is what I see. It's like if we have the belief that we're all contributing energetically in our behavior, in our actions, in our thoughts to the world that we want to create. And if we're expecting someone else to create it for us, then we're going to get a nasty shock because they're not, it's not going to be what we want.
Exactly. Exactly. People need to step up, become an adult mind, become an adult and to start taking action and using energy to do it. Fantastic, Catherine. Well, a big thank you for coming on the show. Much appreciated. Can't believe it was a year ago was the last time.
I can't believe it.
Can you believe that? A year ago. God, time is flying so fast. But a big thank you for coming on the show. Give out all your details there where people can find you, your interviews and about your sanctuary, animal sanctuary and everything you do there.
Thank you so much. My YouTube channel is Catherine Edwards. There are loads of fake ones out there, but you'll see me on there and it's pretty obvious which is the real one. I've got two websites. Catherine Edwards Life has my videos and also all the products that I support because I'm there to help people and provide solutions. CatherineEdwardsAcademy.com gives the training on the animal side of things. And I am just launching this week, by the end of the week, launching my Live, Love, Learn podcast with Catherine Edwards that you'll be able to find on all the main platforms. But if you ever don't know where to find me, go along to my YouTube channel and look in the description box below each video and you'll find everything there. I'm getting quite active on Instagram thanks to my daughter's help as well.
Brilliant, brilliant stuff. I think what you do is great because I think you're on a lot of platforms. I'm kind of kicking and screaming about doing it. And the only reason why I was thinking about it the other day and I said, why am I kind of reluctant to do this stuff? You know, I've been on my background, my corporate background is corporate IT. And I've been in IT for a very long time. And you know what? I'm getting bored with it. That's probably why I'm not bothered doing the stuff that a lot of people do because I've just kind of tired out the IT thing. That's probably why. Maybe I have to get a kick up my arse. I don't know. Maybe spirit is going to have to come in and do something. Well, Catherine, a big thank you for coming on. Much appreciated. I hope you don't leave it for another year. I hope next year or maybe in a few months time we'll do a catch up again. But thank you for coming on. And if you can just bear with me there for a minute, we're going to go off to a musical break and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
There you go, folks. That was Catherine Edwards. A great chat with Catherine. I can't believe it was a year. A year. September last year, 2021, was when I had Catherine on the show. Well, next time I have to make it a few months rather than a year. It's a long time. But brilliant information from Catherine. Very straightforward. Very upfront about her beliefs, her thoughts and everything else. And well done. And she does her own podcasts and interviews people as well. So you can pop over to her YouTube channel and see Catherine do a few interviews there. Very interesting. Right. Okay. Hopefully, I know there's been one or two dropouts. People telling me on the chat room. Thanks for letting me know, folks. There's been a change around here in the studio. And let's just say the data has to go a longer way than it did since last week. There's a long cable and I think there's a bit of latency issues on the actual cable. So by next week, I think what I have to do is redirect the data in a more direct way to the router rather than going through a switch or a hub. That's what I'll have to look at doing for next week. But it wasn't too bad. One or two dropouts on the show, and I think Catherine said once or twice she didn't get me, but I was expecting it to be a lot worse, so I'm thankful that it wasn't that bad. But what I'll be doing is I'll set it up a different way. Plus, also, you know, I said down a couple of weeks ago that I'd be looking to go down the pre-record route, rather than the live route, because after 12 years of doing it live, you know, it's a big commitment, 12 years every Sunday. And the pre-record route just means that if the guest doesn't turn up, it doesn't matter. We can book them back in and I can put them up whenever, you know, one a week or one every 2 weeks, whatever. And I can see how it goes from there. You know, I know people said, oh, but they like downloading the podcast and going, having it in the car and stuff like that. Well, the podcast can still be available in an MP3 format as well as the video on YouTube or Rumble or whatever platform I decide to use. Now, I've ordered some new equipment to come in for the temporary studio too to be set up. So I'll be so when that comes in and I'll be setting it up, I'll be testing it, make sure it's okay, and then I will do an interview from studio two, and then we'll see how we get on. The audio might be different because I won't be using as much equipment, but we'll see how we get on anyway. It's like going back to the early days of OAM. That's what it's going to be like. See the pan stuff. Okay, just an update for people who joined the show a bit late. Just to let you know that, again, thank you very much for your donations. This month's donation has gone to a charity. It's the Cork Dog Action Welfare Group, who take care of rescued and discarded dogs. Thanks to everyone who donates to the Circle of White Light show and the PIF appeal, the Paid Forward appeal. Your donations do make a big difference, and it's obvious when you actually see the people receiving a donation, how happy they are. You know, every little helps, as they say, and it does help them. So a big thank you. And it's not me. You know, I'm only the person passing off the check. If the donations didn't come in, then I wouldn't be able to do it. So it's all thanks to the people who donate and send in a donation. That's the important part there. Okay. Now, again, Richard Cumbers is going to be on the show next week. And he has a Paint Genie Energy Medicine training course in Tralee on the 1st and 2nd of October. So hopefully by next week he'll have a location he can announce when the training's going to take place, and he'll be able to let us know next week, and that'll be good. And what else is, let me see. Right, okay. Now, I was contemplating, I know the people on the chat room have a great chat and they swap loads of chat about things that are going on and everything else. And it's great to have that as a little bit of a community. And I know this is every Sunday. So I was contemplating whether I should set up a Telegram channel for Circle of White Light so people in the chat room and then other people, other listeners, can actually jump onto Telegram and even talk to each other and share information with each other. And so I don't know whether you think that's a good idea, whether I should do that or not. Would there be a point in doing that? I don't know. Send me an email and let me know what you think. If you think it's going to be a good idea, give us a shout and let me know. And I'll have a think about it. And yeah, I think it'd be good because everybody has a great chat. And to be honest with you, if I did the pre-record, I'd have to have a think about how we're going to do that, because I know people go live on YouTube and they have to chat on YouTube, but that's a live show, and that's the whole thing about doing the pre-record, that you're not committed to doing a live show. So I'll have to have a think about it. But yeah, let me know your thoughts, because you guys listen to the show all the time, you know. So it's I'd like to know what you guys want. What do you want me to do? What would you like me to do? Let me know. Send us an email to contact us at circlewhitelight.com. A big thank you to everyone who's tuned into the show and was on the chat room and answered questions. Thanks a lot. And I will be talking to you next week. Have a good week. Take care and enjoy yourselves. Bye-bye.
You have been listening Circle of White Light Radio, focusing on solutions and thinking different.